Rahim. In the name of Allah, the merciful, the compassionate. All praises to Allah, the creator of the universes and their sustainer, the provider of believers and unbelievers. And may His gracious blessings be on the seal of His prophets, the last of His messengers and His holy progeny. And in particular, may His incessant blessings ever continue to flow on that fifth successor to the holy prophet, on Imam Muhammad Baqir salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi. Last night we made a peripheral study of some of the teachings of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, and whilst there is no pretense that we did so in detail or exhaustively, alas, we must move on tonight because we need to discuss the developments that he made towards the program that was set out by his illustrious father. Do you remember Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam had set out the foundation, had indeed laid a strong foundation for that school of thought which he propounded and propagated. He had the opportunity to hold classes and hence taught them by way of du'as, taught them by way of answering questions, and indeed by form of majalises in the name of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam had acquired a role about two-thirds of his imamah. The Umayyads were busy fighting among themselves or just rejoicing with the pleasures of the world. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam therefore took that opportunity to advance his father's goal, that which was in spirit, setting up classes, setting up media whereby there would be communication for the teaching of Islam, took kinetic form under Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. Now, it was not only a school of thought that was propagated, indeed, an actual school was being run. He started these classes. Eminent scholars were his students, as I said, Abu Hanifa, Jabir ibn Yazid, Jafi, Muhammad ibn Muslim. Eminent scholars were students in those classes. They learned tafsir of the Quran there, they learned jurisprudence there. Indeed, they were then able to remit these ahadith into their books. Muslim and Bukhari are also full of quotations from the teachings and hadith of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. Actual classes were being run and tuition given on a day-to-day basis, on a morning and evening basis, so that those classes you hear of that were run by Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam, which inshallah we will discuss in greater detail next year, were already set up by Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. Except that Imam Muhammad Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam took those classes one step even further. All this became possible because after Walid, he is the one, la'natullah alayhi, who poisoned Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, and Walid lived only for a couple of years after the martyrdom of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. There then came Suleiman. He too didn't last more than a couple of years. He became extremely guilty for the martyrdom of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Perhaps more fearful than a feeling of guilt. Fearful that what Hijaz bin Yusuf had done and what the Umayyads had done may bring the wrath of Allah. And therefore he took the contrary course. He called over the leaders of the Umayyads government, including the governor of Medina, and dismissed them all. Some of them were imprisoned. However, not much came out of that politically. What did happen was that it gave Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam the opportunity that he needed to advance his classes and to propagate Islam. Now therefore, during that rule, foundation was laid for these classes to be run and these students gathered around Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. But of course, the peace came under Umar bin Abdul Aziz. When Suleiman died, then Umar took over as the Khalid. He was sympathetic to the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. His role was that the Holy Prophet left numerous ahadith which it was incumbent on a Khalid not to overlook as his predecessors had done. And so he started implementing them. The first step that Umar bin Abdul Aziz took was that he stopped the curse on Imam Ali alayhi salam. It is amazing to note in history that the system, indeed, the systematic procedure of cursing Imam Ali alayhi salam was started in the time of Muawiyah and continued right up to the period of Abdul Aziz. So we are talking of about 41 after Hijrah till about 108, 109 after Hijrah. For over 60 years, therefore, there was a systematic procedure of imposing curse on Imam Ali alayhi salam at numerous sessions. But in particular, there was a set rule that on every Friday, the khutbah should be completed with the curse on Imam Ali alayhi salam. It is amazing that when the one who had done so much good, except that he obstructed Muawiyah from becoming a Khalif, should be cursed. And when we want to curse Yazid and Muawiyah and those who killed the family of the Holy Prophet, we are told we are indulging in a bid'ah. How can that be called a bid'ah? Let us define that word bid'ah. A bid'ah is an innovation. That which was not done by the Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and his progeny, we call bid'ah. The Sunnis go a step further and they say that which was not done by the Prophet or one of the Khulafa'ur Rashidun would be bid'ah. But here we are. Muawiyah actually had set up the procedure of cursing and it was then not regarded as bid'ah, followed by Yazid, followed by Abdul Malik bin Marwan, followed by Marwan and then his son Abdul Malik bin Marwan. Indeed, for years Abdul Malik bin Marwan propagated curse on Imam Ali alayhi salam and it was then not regarded as bid'ah. Indeed, how can a curse be bid'ah? Not my subject this evening, and hence I will not detain on it or detain you on it, except to say this: how can it be a bid'ah when it was a sunnah started by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Let us trace back the history of Lana. When was the first curse imposed? What is a curse? Let us understand that first. When we say La'anatullah, it is the La'ana of Allah, the curse of Allah to be on him. And what does that mean? All that it means is that may Allah's mercy never reach him. That is all that a curse really means. Well, who was the first to curse and who was the first that was cursed? According to Quran, and we do not proceed on hadith, but according to Quran, the first curse came into operation immediately on the creation of mankind. Immediately, Adam was created and Iblis refused to make sujda on him. Allah cursed the Iblis and that was the first. La'anati alayka ila yawm al-deen, as Quran says. Allah says, may my curse be upon you till the day of judgment. Well, so that sunnah was established by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself, and he cursed Iblis. That is the first curse that Quran talks about immediately on creation of mankind. And the Quran repeatedly says, and I will not detain you on this, say to mention it and proceed, come back to Umar bin Abdul Aziz. Quran repeatedly says, وَلَعْنَةُ عَلَى الظَّالِمِينَ, and the curse of Allah is on those who do dhulm. So when we curse Yazid, and when we curse Shimr, and when we curse Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, we are only cursing them for the dhulm that they carried out, and the dhulm that they perpetrated on the purest of souls, on the noblest of men that ever lived on this earth. Well, that curse was was being imposed on Imam Ali alayhi salam for years, as I said, over half a century. It's Umar bin Abdulaziz who ordered that curse be stopped and it be replaced by the ayah of Quran of Surah Hadid, verse 90. the ayah, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَعْمُرُ بِالْعَدْلِ وَالْإِحْسَانِ وَإِنْتَاءِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى and the ayah that says Allah orders you, يَعْمُرُ بِالْعَدْلِ, orders you to act with justice, and يَعْمُرُ بِالْعَدْلِ and to be fair to the orphans and to the widows, and to keep away from rebellion, Baghi, so that we flourish in this world. Verse 19 of Surah Hadid al-Hadid. وَيُتَاهِ بِالْقُرْبَى وَيَهْنَانِ الْفَحْشَاءِ وَالْمُنْكَرِ وَالْبَغِي يَعِذُكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَذَكَّرُونَ. That is the full ayah. And that is the ayah which we still hear in our khutbas. Indeed, it was an ayah that was recited by the Holy Prophet. It was an ayah that was recited by Imam Ali alayhi salam. So Umar bin Abdulaziz replaced that ayah, brought it back where it had been removed by Muawiyah, and this curse put in its place. That then was the first step that Umar bin Abdulaziz took in order to alleviate the enmity that the Umayyads had against Ahlul Bayt. And he did this entirely because he wanted to comply with those ahadith of the Holy Prophet in respect of the Ahlul Bayt. Ahadith of the Holy Prophet regarding Imam Ali alayhi salam, and clearly saying that those who will curse Imam Ali alayhi salam will have the curse of Allah on them, we have discussed in the year 1999. And they are in abundance, and they are in Sunnite books as much as they are in Shiite books. However, to proceed from there, having done that, Umar bin Abdulaziz made a journey to Medina to visit the grave of the Holy Prophet and meet the people. And when he was in Medina, he made an announcement. The announcement was, anybody who had any complaints can come and meet the Khalif and lodge his complaints with him. Now, that was an act of graciousness on the part of the Khalif for the people, so that they have an opportunity to put to him their complaints, and he would seek to redress them. Political acumen of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, that he instantly decided he would go and meet Umar bin Abdulaziz and test his sincerity. And when the Wazir, the minister of Umar bin Abdulaziz, heard from the doorman that Imam Khadakar alayhi salam was at the door seeking to visit the Khalif, he goes to Umar ibn Abdulaziz and says, lo and behold, the grandson of the Prophet is here. Do we let him in? Because you do not know what request he will make. But Umar ibn Abdulaziz instantly said, yes, let him in also as anybody else. And Imam Khadakar alayhi salam was given audience. But then a fantastic thing happened. Because when Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam entered, he saw Umar bin Abdulaziz weeping. He saw tears from his eyes, manifestly crying over an affair. So Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam paused and says, O Umar, what makes you weep? Why are you crying? And he set out the complaints of the previous person and said, that is what has made me weep over it. And Imam alayhi salam starts a khutbah. He says, O Umar, do not be grieved, because that is the state of this world. That is the nature of this world. And here is a beautiful piece of philosophy that follows. Stated to a Khalif, stated in the manner a ruler should behave. But before I send it out to you, may I say it has fullest implications for us if we want to take lessons from them. He starts saying that this world is like a marketplace. Those who go to a marketplace and purchase things there. Some of them come out from the marketplace with things that are beneficial to them. And there are those who buy things that are harmful to them. Both of them pay for those articles, and both of them use them. Those who use beneficial things derive benefits from them. Those who purchase harmful things are inevitably harmed by them, despite the fact that they have paid for those things. It's a glorious statement by itself. But let me take you to the second statement, and then we can couple these together to discuss them. He says, and then when that life is over, death overtakes man. And when death overtakes man, that is the time when he finds that which he would have liked to have with him, he hasn't carried with him. And that which he has carried with him harms him. He finds that which he has left behind and has not carried with him is the subject of his blame. Those people he has left behind blame him for what he has carried with him, and Allah blames him for what he has brought with him. So he has blame on both sides. Where he left, he is blamed. Where he has come to, he is blamed. He now regrets not having carried what he would have liked to have had with him, and regrets having carried what he has brought with him. A beautiful piece of philosophy. And therefore he goes further and says, oh Umar bin Abdul Aziz, therefore we have to be careful that we select in this world that which will be beneficial to us when we leave this world. The amal salih, as I said the other day, we fill our suitcase with virtues, with good deeds, so that those would be the things that we would like to see with us when we are in the next world meeting our Lord. And keep behind the unfahshai wal munkar, the indecencies of this world, the prohibited things, so that we have no regrets over them when we meet our Lord. What a beautiful way of putting life in the perspective of a marketplace. And indeed, that analogy is so very apt, because when we do good deeds, we pay for them, like purchasing an article. We pay for them. The best example that comes to mind is sadaqa. I say this because I had no opportunity to say it last night. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, in one of his teachings, says that there is no mode of evading trouble in this world and the hereafter except by giving sadaqa. Sadaqa, he says, keeps away all tribulations, all afflictions. In this world and the hereafter, the one who takes out sadaqa in the morning will have a full day without any affliction, and one who keeps taking out sadaqa to the extent that he is able to carry it to the next world will find that sadaqa is waiting for him manifold expanded. The hadith of the Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and his progeny, is that people will find that sadaqa has become like the mountain of Kohe Abu Qubais, like the mountain of Abu Qubais, the mountain that we see when we make the tawaf around the Kaaba. That mountain that we see in front of us is Abu Qubais. The Holy Prophet says that tawaf will multiply so many fold that you will see a mountain of tawaf waiting for us. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam gave the greatest emphasis on it, and indeed he says that sadaqa on the day of Friday, he, as I've already said, was of limited means, and yet every Friday he would take out sadaqa. Well, sadaqa is an example then. We pay for it to get the thawab, and this is why Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam's teaching was, when a beggar comes, don't call him a beggar. Don't call him a beggar. In a way, he is doing you a favor, because what you give him in this world becomes your fruits, which you will reap in paradise, where you will need those fruits very badly. Well, those are the teachings. But let us look at the other side of the coin. The wrongs that we do, we pay for those too. All the sins, ma'adallah, may Allah spare us from all of them, that we indulge in, cost a lot of money. Every act of indecency that one might indulge in costs money. It's like a marketplace. You buy that article, you pay money for it to get an article which, when you carry it to the next world, you regret having carried it, because there Allah will not excuse you for it, and it becomes a ground for for your punishment. Well, tomorrow night, inshallah, when we discuss some of the miracles of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, we shall see this aspect of his teaching manifestly and very clearly illustrated by him in one of his miracles. And indeed, it will be relevant to the question of the curse of Muawiyah as well. Well, he then proceeds further and says to Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, he says, "Oh Umar, therefore, if you do not want to cry in this world, all the more you do not want to cry in the next world, do two things. Carry with you that which will be beneficial to you, which you will be pleased to have with you in the next world. Leave behind here that which you think will be harmful to you and you will regret having carried. Hence, O Abdul Aziz, O Umar, do not live on the precedence of your predecessors." Glorious statement by Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam to condemn those who preceded Umar as Khalifs. And there is no mincing of words. He says, don't live on the precedence of your predecessors. And hence, you notice, when Imam Ali alayhi salam was told by the consultation council, which we discussed in 1999, that he should act on the sunnah of the Holy Prophet and of the Khulafa who preceded him, he said, not of the Khulafa. I will act on the sunnah of the Holy Prophet, not of the Khulafa. Some of those had precedence which I will regret carrying to the next world. That is the teaching Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam gives to Umar bin Abdul Aziz and says, don't necessarily follow the precedence of your predecessors. Examine them. He says, examine them. Those precedents which you find contained faults and would have made them regret today in the next world, leave them behind. Don't touch them. Those are practices that are harmful to you. And those that they missed out and for which they are blamed by the population today, and which they would be missing today where they are, those are the qualities you want to grab. Because those then will be the qualities that will be beneficial to you in the next world. And the Imam alayhi salam poses. He has given him the teaching that Umar bin Abdul Aziz required. And I would like to pause as well before I go further. The point I would like you to ponder at this stage is how beautifully was this said. Let us take a moment, and I will detain you no longer, let us take a moment to see the excellence of this personality. When he meets Qatada, he talks to Qatada about those houses by the Buyutun which were raised in order that Allah's praises should take place. Qatada, in his capacity, turns around and says, yes, those houses are not made of bricks and stones. When he meets Abu Hanifa, he talks to Abu Hanifa in a way that he gets satisfied. When he meets that atheist, he talks to that atheist in the way that atheist gets satisfied. When he talks to Jabir, he talks to Jabir in a way Jabir would be satisfied. And when he meets the layman, he talks the way layman would be satisfied. We saw how he dealt with Abu Basir yesterday. Tonight we see how he deals with the Khalif. And when he meets with the Khalif, he gives them petals of flowers from which he can see grand fragrance which he keeps inhaling. But such was the great fragrance, such was the fragrance of these teachings that Umar bin Abdul Aziz turns to Imam Muhammad Baqir and says, O Ahlul Bayt ibn Nubuwwah, proceed and tell me more, because what you have told me has not quenched my thirst. That is the level that this Caliph should say, what you have told me is not enough. And the address to Umar bin Abdul Aziz, Ya Ahlul Bayt ibn Nubuwwah, or the household of the Prophet. And what a correct address, because one personality, Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, constituted the Ahlul Bayt. That constituted the household of the Ahlul Bayt. And therefore, how correct when we, in our salutation to the 12th Imam alayhi salam, we say, Assalamu alaikum, ya Ahl Bayt al-Nubuwwah, wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Indeed, because he is the paragon, he is the representative of that entire household as he stands. He is not an individual, and I hope I shall discuss tomorrow in Versova in the afternoon. He is not an individual, he is the collection of the entire Ahlul Bayt. And that is how even this Umayyad Khalif addressed Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. And when asked to tell him more, the Imam alayhi salam proceeds and tells him more. He says, oh Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, if you wish to know more, three things you can bear in mind. One, when you are in pleasure, particularly in a khalif, applies to us all in our smaller capacities as well. When you are in pleasure, do not do that which is false. I pause to say, how many false things do we do on the day of Eid? Eid is not a day of sinning. But how many of us have converted it into a day of sinning? 30 days television is not watched because it is the holy month of Ramadan. And after that, rina on the day of Eid becomes lawful. Astaghfirullah, ma'azallah. Eid is the day on which we get our reward. How can we sin on that day? But the moment we have pleasure, we turn to that which is false. The moment we have free time and are in good mood, we gather and start talking ill of others. And we start backbiting others. Because that spirit of pleasure, that spirit of freedom from worry, gives us that audacity to do that which is wrong. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam cautions us on that and says, when you have pleasure, do not do that which is false. And when you are angry, do not take away the right of another person. And this is what the Khulafa do. And indeed, we, when we have authority, do it. Authority as a father, authority as a master to a servant. That you do that, taking away the right of a person simply because you are angry on him or sometimes on other persons, and issue orders in that state of anger. And hence, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, in his letter to Malik al-Ashtar in document 53, says, Malik, when you are in anger, do not take any decision and do not issue any orders. That is the teaching of the other Masoom to another governor. He says, do not take any decision. Pause and think of Allah. Think of Allah. Think of just that one word, Qisas. Just one word, that there will be retaliation by Allah on you as you, as a governor, take wrong action and in your anger do injustice to other people. So pause, Malik. Recollect yourself. And when you are in a state of stability of mind, then take the decision which is correct. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam poses that advice to Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, who is down in a receptive mood, and says, in your anger, do not do injustice to another person. And thirdly, in your might, do not take away that from someone else which does not belong to you. This is what the mighty do, whether khalifs or non-khalifs. But khalifs did that too. The immediate response to that teaching of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam was that Umar bin Abdul Aziz asked his minister, give me pen and paper. Pen and paper was given to him, and he immediately issued the order that sadaq be returned to Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. Who tells you, I keep asking, who tells you that these Imams alayhi salam that we are talking about were religious people who would sit and worship Allah and cry over Allah but had no political acumen? You can see the political acumen of the excellent order here exercised by Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. Not only did he take the opportune step of going to see Umar bin Abdul Aziz, but he developed the sentiments of Umar ibn Aziz with beautiful sayings, with wise advice, And when Abdulaziz himself asked for further advice, he gives an advice of momentous importance and says to him, what is indeed good for him, that do not out of your might take away things belonging to other people. It is amazing. We see little children do that. The stronger child takes away the pencil of the weaker child and doesn't return it. It is our teaching at home that enables him to do that. It is our failure to teach him that he must not take away the things of other person. When we see a pencil not belonging to him, the mother's duty is to say, where do you get this from? Return it now, because you cannot hold for 1 second the property of another person. Well, that was the teaching that Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam gave to Umar bin Abdul Aziz, leaving him immediately to return Sadaq. A few moments on Sadaq only as a reminder, and no more than a few moments only, because Sadaq is a subject that we have discussed at some length in 1990. Sorry, in the year 2000. In the year 2000 we discussed Sadaq at some length. Sadaq, the first person who took away Sadaq from Ahlul Bayt was Abu Bakr. It was his order. Well, it may have been instigated by Omar, but on record, the order was the order of Abu Bakr. And that is what prompted Bibi Fatima to Zahra salamullahi alayha. To go to the court of Abu Bakr and make that momentous speech of hers. A speech from a lady that has remained in the annals of history. No less than 2 dozen proverbs in Arabic have come out of that speech alone. In the year 2000, we did not have the opportunity to discuss the speech as a whole. I've had the good fortune in 2 years to discuss that entire speech at another place in Mumbai during the first Ashura. Beautiful speech of Ibn Fatima to Zahra salamullahi alayha, which in a way led Abu Bakr to return, but he never returned Sadaq to Ibn Fatima to Zahra salamullahi alayha. She left the world in agony. Not that Sadaq was any property that the fruits of which she enjoyed for personal gain. All the income from Sadaq went to the poor, the orphans and the widows. Not a cent was kept. All that was in her house was thirst and hunger, and proof of that was given by the angels, yatiman, miskiman, wa asira. Those are the witnesses to her household. Yet, Sadaq was taken away. Ground given was that the Ummah needs that income. The Ummah was going to receive that income anyway. And because Ummah needs income does not justify falsely taking away property belonging to another person, as Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam proved to Umar bin Abdul Aziz and admonished him on that point. However, Umar bin Khattab continued with control over Sadaq, and Uthman went a step further. Uthman then did not think that the Ummah needed the income of Sadaq. By then the Ummah was well placed. Look at the resources, look at the revenue that Uthman himself had. Look at the vast estate that Uthman left for inheritance when he died. Well, so income of Sadaq was not needed by the Ummah anymore. Hence, one third of Sadaq was given to Marwan bin Hakam, his son-in-law. You can imagine how things were distributed. Then, when Muawiyah took charge of Sadaq, Muawiyah divided it into three. He gave one third, he allowed Marwan bin Hakam to retain one third. One third went to Amr bin Uthman, and one third went to his son Yazid. Yazid perhaps did need it for all the sins, for all the indecencies that he had to purchase in that marketplace that Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam was talking about. Well, that is how it was distributed. When Yazid took power, he controlled Sadaq, and the entire income for Sadaq, for personal gain, except that Marwan still had his one third. And then when Marwan bin Hakam became the Khalid, as we saw a few nights back, he took over the entire charge, because now he was the Khalid. So the share of Yazid became his share. Share of Ibn Uthman had already been taken by Yazid. So the entire Sadaq became the personal property of Marwan bin Hakam. By what sense of justice were these who were called Khalis conduct their affairs? And then those who are regarded as Khalis by the Ummah continued exercising control. Abdul Malik bin Marwan exercised control over Sadaq as his personal property. And indeed, treating it as his personal property, he gave it to his son Abdul Aziz. Abdul Aziz gave it to his son Umar, and this is the Umar now who handed it back to Imam Ahmad Bakr alayhi salam. I thought I'd take a few minutes to let you quickly know the synopsis. And if I may, if you allow me 2 more minutes, I will tell you that it did not remain with Imam Ahmad Bakr alayhi salam. The moment Umar bin Abdul Aziz died, when Umar bin Abdul Aziz gave it to Muhammad Bakr alayhi salam, his family protested. The Umayyads protested. They went to him and said, "What is this?" Indeed, his brother went to him and said, "Our entire family protests, saying that you are giving the family of Fatima," because she was the owner of Fatima, "the family of Fatima priority over the family of the Umayyad." And Umar bin Abdul Aziz says, "Yes, I do that, and I do that because clear are the words of the Holy Prophet." And I say, this is written in their books as much as ours, clear are the words of the Holy Prophet saying, "Fatima bid'atun minni, man aadaha faqad aadani," Fatima is part of me. So she is no different from the Holy Prophet. You cannot look at Fatima alayhi salam in isolation. She is part and parcel of the prophethood of the Holy Prophet, because she had to convey the message of the women, and women constitute an important equal part of humanity. Well, he says, the Holy Prophet says, he who injures Fatima has injured him. And I do not want to injure or annoy the Holy Prophet. And he who pleases Fatima, and we have seen this hadith in full in the year 2000, he who pleases Fatima pleases the Holy Prophet, and he who pleases the Holy Prophet pleases Allah. And that hadith is spread throughout the resources of the Islamic literature. So, in doing this, I am pleasing Allah, and I am pleasing the Prophet, and the Umayyads should be happy with that decision. This is how Umar bin Abdul Aziz replied. One wishes that common sense prevailed amongst the other Khulafa also. That teaching of Imam Ahmad Bakr alayhi salam, "When you are mighty, don't snatch and grab the property of others," was not an easy teaching for anybody to follow. The moment Umar died and Yazid became the Khalif, he took away the property from Imam Ahmad Bakr alayhi salam, and it kept swaying between Banu Hashim and Banu Umayyah. Mansur al-Dawanki took tight control over Sadaq when he was the Khalif. When the Abbasides came, then Safa gave it to Abdullah bin Hassan. One wonders by what standard, but he gave it to Abdullah bin Hassan. But immediately Musa came, and Harun al-Rashid, la'natullah alayhi, came, took away again. Then Ma'mun formally gave it to Imam Rida alayhi salam, and we shall discuss that when we come to Imam Rida alayhi salam. Soon it was taken away again from them. It came, it vacillating, so long as the Umayyads remained, save for the period that Umar ibn Abdul Aziz gave it to Imam Ahmad Bakr alayhi salam. They kept control, and then the other sides kept control, save for the period that Imam Rida alayhi salam had. This is how Sadaq went. Not that the Ummah received benefit from it, not that the resources of Sadaq went to the Ummah, they went into personal pockets of various Khulafa. That then is the story of the Sadaq and how that served. But when he died, that is
Umar bin Abdul Aziz died, Yazid came. Yazid was then followed by Hisham, la'natullah alayhi. I've already discussed with you how Hisham was the person instrumental to the poisoning of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. And indeed, he became instrumental to the martyrdom of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, which inshallah we shall discuss tomorrow night. Well, Hisham was as cruel as he could be. Arch enemy of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, out to kill anybody who spoke for Ahlul Bayt. And indeed, he was even out to kill Jabir. This Jabir we've been talking about, Jabir bin Yazid Jafi, he wanted to kill him too. You can see there's been no compunction in the Umayyads in killing companions of the Prophet. As we have seen, Sa'id bin Khudri, particularly during the Battle of Hurra that we discussed last Sunday night. And indeed, no compunction in killing companions of the Imams alayhi salam either. Indeed, Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam calls Jabir in good time, political acumen again, and says, Jabir, you will soon be ordered to be killed. Jabir says, I will comply, I will be pleased with the orders of Allah. But Imam says, no, you can be saved. Jabir pretends to have gone mad. And then, under your madness, you will be saved. So Jabir feigns, pretends to be mad. You can see that man of great eminence, a man who had accumulated, did I not say last night, 70,000 hadiths from Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, single-handed. That person now pretends to be a madman. He takes a stick, he says, this is my horse. And like a little boy, he moves around in the lane saying, I'm galloping on my horse on the stick. And people say, Jabir is mad. Hisham issues the order in Damascus that Jabir be killed for no wrong at all. For who was there to ask Hisham, why should Jabir be killed? That arrogance and that tyranny of the Khulafa gave a bad name to Islam. Well, he ordered that Jabir be killed. But the minister said, but do we need to kill him? Because he's a madman. This is how he's acting. He takes grass and eats grass. He behaves like a little child. We don't need to kill him at all. And Hisham says, leave him. But the tyranny of Hisham is what made Zayd, the younger brother of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, take arms. He, contrary to the teachings of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, decided that he must confront Hisham. He went to Damascus. Zayd was known as a very religious person. Indeed, if people asked in Medina, who is Zayd? They would say he's an ally of Quran, as Sheikh Mufid alayhi rahmah describes. Pious man. A man who would sit and weep in the fear and awe of Allah. Weep to the extent, as Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam describes, a mu'min should weep, that his tears would even course down his cheeks and would mix with his running nose. That was Zayd. However, he went out to Hisham and he decided that he will take arms against Hisham. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam's attitude was, it would be reprehensible to do so. Indeed, Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam regretted that decision. Zayd took up arms ultimately in the time of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, and he was martyred in the time of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam in the year 119 after Hijrah. Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam was martyred in the year 116. But in the time of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, this campaign of Zayd had already started, and it started entirely because of the atrocities of Hisham. Well, Zayd said that Hisham had no right to be a caliph, and he should be replaced by a person from the Ahlul Bayt who was most fit to be the Imam. People of his time attributed this as his own ambition, that he wanted to be the Imam. Sheikh Mufid alayhi rahmah feels that may not have been so only because Zayd was a pious man, and he knew the wasiyah made by his father Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, that after him, the Imam would be Imam Ahmad Baqir alayhi salam. And Imam Ahmad Baqir alayhi salam had assumed Imamah, and he accepted that assumption for quite a while after the martyrdom of Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam. And he did not challenge the Imamah of Imam Ahmad Baqir alayhi salam at any stage. There was also no doubt, as I have repeatedly said, that there was no person, Hazrat Zaid or no Hazrat Zaid, no person to match Imam Zain al-Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam in his afdaliyah, in his excellence, whether by way of piety or knowledge or jurisprudence or good actions. He was afdal, and vis-a-vis him, Hazrat Zaid was mazloom. Well, he took up this scheme. There were those who said, as Sheikh Muqeel alayhi rahmah says, that he set out to avenge the blood of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. But Imam Ahmad Baqir alayhi salam, even on that score, took exactly the line that Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam took vis-a-vis Sulaiman bin Surb and vis-a-vis Mukhtar, both of which events we have already discussed last Sunday night. Well, so Imam Ahmad Baqir alayhi salam dissociated totally with that stand of Hazrat Zayd, and indeed warned him not to take those actions. But Hazrat Zayd, in his emotion, went forward. He went to see Hisham. Hisham first refused to meet him, but ultimately became obliged to meet him. When he met him, Hisham turned. He turns to Hisham and says, "Oh Hisham, fear Allah for what you are doing. These atrocities that you are meeting out to the people." Hisham says, "But it is you who wants to make a false claim to be a Khalif." Zaid says, "Well, if it is between you and I, then how is my claim a false claim?" Hisham says, "You're making a false claim because your mother was a slave girl." Well, we pause here and turn around to Hisham and say, if that is the criterion, then where is the motherhood of your mother and the mother of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam? For him we say, he is Ibnul Khayratain. His father was a son of Hussein. His mother was a daughter of Hassan, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhima. Both Sayyida, Shadar, Shabab, Ahlil Jannah. What right did Hisham on his own criterion have to remain as a Khalif? However, Zaid gave him a reply from a different angle, because the reply applicable to Imam Ahmad Baqir alayhi salam would not apply to Zaid. Zaid turns round to Hisham and says, "Hisham, what criterion are you talking about? We are only talking about a mother of a Khalif to be. But how about a prophet? Ismail, the son of Ibrahim, was an illustrious prophet of Allah, a prophet from his progeny, our prophet was born." Well, and look at the mother of Ismail. History unanimously accepts that the mother of Ismail was a slave girl, and yet her son becomes a prophet. Hisham becomes dumbfounded and orders that Zaid be arrested and locked up. But he wasn't locked up. He left Damascus to Kufa. He took up arms in Kufa. But just as Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam told the Kufians in the bazaar of Kufa on his first visit after the martyrdom of his distinguished father, he told them that you Kufis are totally unreliable. You are disloyal. You are untrustworthy. Will I accept your bay'ah? You gave bay'ah to my father and behaved treacherously to him. You gave bay'ah to Imam Hassan alayhi salam and abandoned him. You called my father Imam Hussein and made bay'ah to him in the hand of Muslim ibn Aqil and then murdered him in Karbala. What bay'ah do I want from people of your kind and character? Zaid, however, took them as associates, and they jettisoned Zaid as well, ultimately. And indeed, that revolt, that rebellion of Hazrat Zaid alayhi salam was so short-lived. It started on a Wednesday, and by Friday, Zaid was martyred. He was killed. The people who killed him buried him too. Yusuf, the governor of Kufa, when he came to know the next morning that Zaid had been buried, ordered that his body be exhumed. The body was exhumed, he was torn naked, and his body was crucified. It was kept hanging for 50 long months on the order of Hisham. And when those 50 months were over, the body of Zayd was burnt and the ashes were distributed in Iraq. This is how they treated that pious person. Well, but the point that I want to make, and the reason it becomes relevant to our discussion, is that it is at this stage when Hazrat Zayd set out to make this campaign that the person most competent in the household of the Holy Prophet, elected by the people, selected by the people, can be a Khalif. That is when that sect of Zayd is started. So you can see the Shias are now splitting, and this is the first split that I want to discuss. From the Ithnasharis, there were not 12 already. We are still on the fifth Imam alayhi salam, but they were Ithnasharis in the sense that they accepted that hadith of the Holy Prophet that he would have 12 successors. Even the Sunnis believe in that hadith that the Holy Prophet said he would have 12 successors, except that their khulafa after Imam Ali alayhi salam is Muawiyah, and after Muawiyah, Yazid could also be Khalid. After Yazid, there is dispute whether Marwan was a Khalif or not. But Abdul Malik bin Marwan, whose life we just discussed, is accepted as a Khalif. And after Abdul Malik bin Marwan, all his four sons became Khalifs. Suleiman, Walid was also a Khalif. Suleiman was also a Khalif. Umar bin Abdul Aziz was also a Khalif. And Hisham was also a Khalif. All these are required. They had to make up the figure of 12. So all these had to be counted in to make the figure of 12. But we Ithnasharis were Ithnasharis then because of that figure that the Holy Prophet gave. Not only of that figure, but the Holy Prophet had given us names in advance. So Jabir knew the name of his 12 Imams before he was martyred. And so did all the Shias of the time. First split therefore from us is by the Zaydis and their Imams. After Imam Ali alayhi salam was Imam Hassan alayhi salam, and after him Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and after him Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, and the fifth Imam then became Hazrat Zayd and not Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. That is how they split from us in the lifetime of Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. However, they continued after Zayd, and just a few moments of your time, I know time from the side has come in, but just 2 or 3 minutes, let me acquaint you with their position until today in a quick survey. After Zayd, his son Yahya, he took over, he also took up arms. But as Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam, as Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam told Yahya, to continue with these battles was useless when you are not ready for the battle. The Umayyads had a full army. You are ill prepared. A few people setting up a rebellion, that rebellion would be crushed. It only gives the rebellion a bad name. But Yahya went forward because to them, he is an Imam who stands and fights. Well, each of our Imams was a Qaim, but the Holy Prophet had long ago said that the duty to stand and fight will be the duty of the 12th Imam alayhi salam. However, they became impatient and went on. Yahya was also killed by Hisham in no time. Then his son, Muhammad bin Abdullah, known as Nasr Zakiya, he set up, he raised people in Khurasan. He too was killed by a general of Mansur al-Dawanaqi. So he too died. After him came Ibrahim. He too wanted to fight. He too fought. Mansur al-Dawanaqi killed him also. So they were all killed. But the dynasty continued. After Ibrahim came Idris. He set up the Idrisi dynasty in what is Mauritania of today. And in Mauritania, his imamah continued. But in no time, that imamah got split up. They got disorganized, and the strength of that sect totally failed. There are Zaydis even today. We find them in the north of Yemen. There is a Zaydi Imam in the north of Yemen. I've met a few Zaydis in Damascus. A few are there too. So there are a few Zaydis here and there, small pockets in the world, but not of great significance. That then is a very brief survey of the guidance, not of great importance. But this is the essence. The final thing I must say about the guidance before I leave them, at the risk of taking two more minutes of your time, is this: that these people whom I have named, Yahya, Muhammad bin Abdullah, Ibrahim, they were not adverse to Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam or to Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam in any way at all, and it was expected that they were not. Hence, that Shiite doctrine that only he can become an Imam, based on common sense and on logic after all, that only he can become an Imam who is the most pious of all the pious, who is the most knowledgeable of all the knowledgeable people, who comes from the progeny of the Holy Prophet and Imam Ali alayhi salam, they had to abandon the gap to their progeny of Imam Ali alayhi salam. But they could not, just as the Ahl al-Sunnah had to abandon them at the first stage. They said, oh, we will have Abu Bakr. What happens to that doctrine of Abdaliyah? What happens to that doctrine of abandonment by the Holy Prophet? They had to abandon them. And so that doctrine of designation, of Nas, was abandoned by the Zaydis. And they therefore could not answer the Sunnites when the Sunnites say, well, if you don't have the doctrine of Abdaliyah, if Zayd can be Imam when Muhammad Baqir is there, if Yahya can be Imam when Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam is there, then why can't Abu Bakr be Khalif? They accepted that Abu Bakr was a true Khalif. So you can see a major departure of Zaydids from Shiite doctrines. So they accepted that Abu Bakr was a legitimate Khalif and Umar was a legitimate Khalif. Well, the Ummah at that time needed a senior man. Ali had killed many kuffar who were now part of the Ummah. The kind of arguments that was raised in Karbala, you find raised by the Zaydis and accepted by them. And as indeed was the argument raised by Umar for justifying his Khilafah over Imam Ali alayhi salam. But strangely, they now depart from the Sunnis. They say, Uthman, no. Uthman was not of the level of Umar and Abu Bakr, and therefore they did not accept Uthman. So they accept the Khilafah of Abu Bakr, they accept the Khilafah of Umar, they then jump and they take over Imam Ali alayhi salam and they start their dynasty of Imamah. Hence you will find that their departure from us is a major departure. It's a fracture, literally a fracture of the Shiite bone. And indeed, we cannot compromise on those principles because they've departed from us on most basic principles. Hence, a person not competent can be a Khalif, and ask, he may not be a Mufassir, he may not be a Fakir. And they say, yes, so long as there is a Mufassir to guide him, that is okay. So long as there is Qazi Shureh to give fatwa to Yazid that you can murder Hussein, that was all right for them. And that is how it went, that fatwa from Qazi Shureh, that Hussein be murdered for not making bay'ah to Yazid, brings Hussein to Karbala. But when Hussein alayhi salam comes to Karbala, he does not come single-handed. He does not come empty-handed. When he comes to Karbala, he brings to Karbala him who is a total replica of the Holy Prophet himself. Indeed, when Shahzad Ali Akbar came to seek leave to go to the battlefield, Imam Hussein alayhi salam raised his hands to Allah and says, oh Allah, a stage has now come in Karbala when I am sending to the battlefield to fight for Islam him who is the very replica of the Holy Prophet himself, khulqan wa khulqan, in every way, and natiqan, his speech is the speech of the Holy Prophet, his face is the face of the Holy Prophet, his akhlaq are the akhlaq of the Holy Prophet, his gait is the gait of the Holy Prophet. Ya Allah, whenever we wanted to make the ziyarah of the Holy Prophet, we would look at Ali ibn al-Akbar, that is the replica. I now send to the battlefield, but he says, Akbar, don't go just like that. First go and bid farewell to your aunt Zainab,
Because Zainab is the one who brought you up. And when Akbar comes to me, Zainab alayhi salam, says, Zainab, says Akbar, we always knew that we brought you up so that you are martyred in the cause of Allah. But even that knowledge is not sufficient to give me consolation today. It is still hard for me to part with you, Akbar. We brought you up with such care. And now, go, how do I give you leave? But look at the answer Ali Akbar gives to his sister. Says, oh my, to his aunt, he says, oh aunt, what can you do? If you do not give me leave, what will you say to your mother on the day of judgment? She will say, Zainab, you made your Akbar more precious than Islam than you saw Hussein. My son is precious to me. If Hussein was not that precious, Akbar should not have been that precious to you. Zainab says, Akbar, even at the last minute, you win me over by your argument. Go, Akbar, go. Give your life in the cause of Islam, Akbar. Make sure that that Adhan you recited this morning remains alive to the day of judgment. Akbar goes. And Akbar fights a ferocious battle. But the time comes when Akbar comes back and says, Father, I've come back because I'm so thirsty. I'm winning this battle. I'm winning this battle because I've killed so many. And indeed, he killed in thousands. Thousands of people were killed by Akbar in that battle. He says, oh Father, if I can have just little water that is left anywhere in the tent, I would go and finish this kufar. Al-Mam says, there is Akbar, you make me feel so oppressed because when you have won such a gigantic battle with valiant warriors, you as a son should come to me. And as a son, all that you ask from me is water. And Hussein, God give you water. May Allah curse those who withheld water on Hussein and on Akbar and on Akbar. May Allah ever curse them. Hussein is not able to give a drop of water to Akbar. Says Akbar, take my tongue into your mouth. When Akbar does that, he immediately retreats, saying, Father, your tongue is even drier than my tongue. Hussein keeps his ring on the tongue of Akbar, and says, Akbar, go. This time, when Akbar goes, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is trailing him. Akbar, here's the footsteps behind him. Turn back and see his false father following him. Say, Father, you allowed me to go. Why are you coming? Hussein says, Akbar, if you had a son 18 years old and he was going to die, you would do what I am doing. Akbar, then you would understand what I'm doing. Today you don't. But go ahead, my son. Go ahead, it's the path of Allah. Akbar goes. And indeed, then that time comes when Allah says, I will indeed kill Akbar, even if the curse of all Arabs come to me. And he puts that spear into the chest of Akbar, that spear which makes Akbar then uncomfortable. He is unbalanced. He comes on the ground and calls for his father, saying, Ya Baba, Imam Hussein alayhi salam now gallops towards Akbar, but his eyesight is gone, his vision is gone, he's not able even to see. He says, Ya Akbar, Ad-Dunya, Afad, Adaka, Ya Bunaya, Ya Bunaya, oh my son, after you, this world is only dust to me. It is not worth living. I've lost my vision. Abbas went, I've lost my back. You going, I lost my eyesight. What do I now live for? He comes to the body of Akbar. He finds Akbar holding his hand on his chest. Says, Akbar, why did you do that? Akbar did not want to tell him that spear of Sinan. When Shahzad Ali Akbar took it out, its edge got stuck in his chest. Now it is causing pain to Akbar. Akbar says, it is causing me pain, my father. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, Akbar, I cannot let you die in pain. Akbar, you must go peacefully. Now Hussein has to repair, to remove that edge. He folds his sleeves.
gets onto his knees, and now the father holds the chest of Akbar and pulls that edge of spear from the chest of Akbar. A gush of blood comes out. Imam Hussain alayhi salam puts his hand to stop the gush of blood. That was the last breath of Akbar. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, Akbar, sorry it's for you that you're praying in this thirst. I couldn't give you water. Akbar says, Father, I am relieved. I see my grandfather with water of Akbar. But I'm worried about you, Father. Who will be there when you will be going? You are here to console me. Who will be consoling you? And Akbar goes, Hussein, it is said, could not even lift the body of Akbar. Zainab saw from the tent, Hussein, not able to bring the body of Akbar. Zainab comes out and goes to the body of Akbar. Asif Imam Hussein says, Zainab, I am still alive, Zainab. You can't come out of the tent when I am still living. Zainab, I can't see you in this shape. Go back, bring the little children. Now the little brothers, and indeed, according to one hadith, even Suqayda came out. Imam Hussain says, Suqayda, you also are here. Suqayda says, Father, what can I do? The pearl of my heart is gone. What can I do other than that? The pearl of your heart is gone. I have come to console you and take my brother back to the tent. Oh, faithful. Oh, one of Allah Akbar. Now, the lash of Akbar is being raised, not by Imam Hussain, but by the little children, and they carry to the tent. Allah la'natullahi ala al-qawmi al-zalimi, wa say'alamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun qalabiyyan qalibun, inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un, rahmullahu man yakra al-fatiha.